It's Friday, December 14th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 286 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 59 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
Three announcements. Let's knock these out real quick. First off, there is a graphic or an illustration that someone on our forums did a while back of Boots the Pegasus.
Oh, yes.
Which is a sort of tribute to a combination of role-playing games, Fear the Boot, and My Little Pony. Now, if you guys will recall, I actually have a Boots the Pegasus, which is a custom that was made by Manaya. Mm-hmm. So she made me Boots the Pegasus, who's wearing the Fear the Boot boots and has, like, I think her cutie mark is dice, and she has a little bag that has dice in it. She has vampire fangs and all this kind of stuff. Well, all right. So anyway, someone on our forums, Rem went back and drew this into a really awesome picture, and several people were like, man, I want that on a t-shirt. Manaya is offering that if you are interested, she is going to try and get a custom print run done of these shirts. I will put a link to this in the show notes where you can see what she's asking for in terms of price point and also see a link to the graphic and all that stuff. And she is going to try and deliver these at Fear the Con 6, but is also given the option that if you can't come to Fear the Con 6, you're still a bad person, but she will try to work it out with you to ship it to you. Just to be clear, this is not something that we as a podcast are doing. This is just something that someone in the community is doing and we are making you aware of. The second thing, also from Manaya, this one is quite different in nature, is coming up at Fear the Con 6. Once again, she will be taking up the slack and doing Fear the Fruit. And what we have done in years past, as you guys probably know by this point, is someone takes up a collection and then goes to a local farmer's market and will buy several pallets of fruit so that people at the convention have healthy snack options. And then after the convention is over, all the fresh fruit that's left over, which is usually a pretty significant amount just because we get so much, will then be taken to a women's shelter or a homeless shelter or something like that and donated to charity. So if you are interested in backing that, then I will put a link to that in the show notes. The third and final thing is, now that we have announced our grand prize winner and I am getting the ones from the other shows, by the time this show drops, there should be a link to the poll to begin voting for the grand prize winner of the postcards from the dungeon contest. If that link is not there, it's only because I'm still trying to get a finalist from one of the shows, and I will then put it up with our next episode. But as of this recording, I at least intend to have that poll running by the time this show drops.
So everybody who's emailing me asking me where the hell the winners are, you can stop.
Well, the individual winners have to find out they won on the respective shows and identify right. themselves to the shows. All I'm handling is our winner, which we announced last time, and I have already been contacted by our winner, and then the grand prize voting for anyone that claims their prize. So if you don't claim your prize because you didn't hear yourself announce one of the shows,
go claim my prize.
Take my prize. I like your raincoat. Then that's what it takes to get in, is you got to claim your prize. I have a confession to make here.
You really actually do love My Little Pony.
No.
You don't love My Little Pony?
I realize these are equally controversial stances, so I will take no stance whatsoever. I neither agree nor disagree with that statement.
You are waffling on ponies. You are a wishy-washy ponier.
That's right.
And there's probably a pony
who's
wishy-washy.
Yeah, what ponies does that make
him? Ponies, yeah, they're like wishy-washy hooves or something like that.
I'm sure
like
there
that,
is, so. Yes. Maybe. You can go online and
probably
find
derpy.
Out.
Derpy hooves. Mm-hmm. Sure, they were selling a limited run Derpy Hooves toy at Comic-Con this year.
Were they really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's the only place you could get it, as far as I know. There may be some brony who's like frothing because there's derpyhooves.org where you can order these by the pallet. Yeah. But at least as far as I know, it was a limited print run. They were only doing at Comic-Con 2012. You could get a Derpy Hooves. And actually, that was not the toy I tried to get. They had a limited run of Bruticus. Mm-hmm. And I tried to get him, and they sold out of Bruticus. I mean, just like, bam, 5 minutes, and he was gone.
Wow.
And so that was pretty disappointing.
Try kickasstoys.com.
Well, I could try kickasstoys.com or eBay, but I'm sure I would probably be adding a factor of 3 to 5, if not more, of what it would cost me.
Obviously, you don't want Bruticus bad enough. I thought you were a true Transformers fan.
Well, yes, but Unicron is my number one. Bruticus is a close second. And Unicron's watching, so I can't claim I would spend more on Bruticus than Unicron.
Fair enough.
While Unicron is watching, okay?
Fair enough.
Now, if we go to another room, close the door, turn up the TV, maybe write notes back and forth, I might give you a different price point on Bruticus, but not while he's watching. Look, even Orson Welles knew it was the top of his career. He recorded Unicron's voice and then died.
Just checked out. Done.
He's like, I can't beat this. I'm done. I have accomplished all that a man can accomplish in my life. I have been the voice of Unicron. Everything else was just lead up to get him through the audition process to be Unicron.
Would you say he was full of green penis?
Wow, that's...
It's kind of a reach even for Pat. Is it even Pat shaking his head?
No, it's from Pinky and the Brain.
I know what you're talking
Orson
about. I'm
Welles,
just trying to remember.
Green penis? No.
No.
Good night, folks.
I guess I haven't seen it.
Pat doesn't get it. It's out. It's all a dead right. joke.
Okay, so anyway, that's not my confession.
Yes.
My confession is this. Sorry, as I mentioned in the show notes of a prior show, I guested on a show that was hosted by...
Orson Welles?
I wish. Mikey Mason and his co-host, Jonah. And I talked about Fear the Con. Okay, now that's mm-hmm. that's not the point of this bit of conversation, because I said I linked that in the prior show notes. But their show is called Pros and Cons. For about 2 weeks, I'm like, pros and cons? It's kind of a random name. I mean, pros and cons, mm-hmm. the good and the bad, right? And Mikey kept saying, well, this is a show about conventions. And it took me 2 weeks to realize pros and cons is a pun on the traditional pros and cons, good and bad, right. and professionals and conventions.
Pros at cons.
So I'm going to go ahead and admit that I am a dumbass. Now, I am not such a dumbass that I would buy a dinosaur's board game, Wayne.
John requested that board game.
I was going to say.
That is a Christmas gift for John that he is excited about.
Hold up. Yeah. This is a confession I was not previously told. John pegged this on you.
No, I told him I saw it at one of those antique malls that are really flea markets. Uh-huh. And he's like, you've got to buy it. I'll pay you to buy it.
I can vouch.
So I went and I bought it for him as a Christmas gift.
Yeah. See, John threw you under the bus under that one. He was like, oh, Wayne's such a gooch or whatever. He wants the dinosaurs board game.
No, John requested it. So I went back to that indoor antique mall that's really a flea market.
Yeah. So, John, it is you who are the gooch.
That's the Rod Serling ending to this. It turns out that man is the gooch. See, look, I buy dumb things, but I don't try to throw other people under the bus when I buy dumb things.
I want that as a ringtone, Dan, in your best Rod Serling voice. It turns out... Man is the gooch.
I'll have to listen to him a little bit because I've seen some Twilight Zone, but it's been too long.
He has a very distinctive way of talking.
I want the soundbite of I buy dumb things because I want that to be our ringtone for Dan. I buy dumb things. I buy dumb things. Hey, Dan.
No. I do buy dumb things.
I want the Rod Sterling. Right,
I buy a lot of dumb
but
things.
But here's the thing. I do one of two things. Either A, take responsibility for them, or B, I hide them. I do not attempt to claim that somebody else is responsible. I'm like, oh yeah, I went out and bought the collector set bird plate from Time Life because Chad wanted it.
Yeah, I do not own the Dinosaurs board game. That is a Christmas gift for John.
I see.
That is at my house.
Yeah,
very well. The man loves this dinosaurs.
Jim Lai, by the way, I want you to know that the trial of Johan for the crime of being a juggalo is still coming up. So in your preparation of your case, if the defense attorney is known to lie, this could be an issue of consideration in the trial. I'm just letting you know that in advance, since it's completely normal for the judge to give tips to one side or the other during a case.
So, England.
Now, what I did buy myself for all of us to try,
here we go,
was a week or so ago at gaming.
Black tar heroin?
No, I wouldn't admit to that on the mics.
Okay.
I went to a local Japanese store, and I bought 6 different flavors of the most disgusting ramen I could find, ramenade. This is a drink. It's a Japanese soda like with the marble inside. And I brought this over with little sample cups so everyone would try it.
You listed 6 flavors. Now, I wasn't there for this. There was only one flavor in there that sounded palatable. Because I remember it was like teriyaki.
Teriyaki was...
The two okay. that were reasonable to me, at least, were ginseng and curry.
Ginseng. That was the yeah. one that, when you were yeah. listening to my ginseng, was the one that sounded, because I've had ginseng drinks before, and at the risk of sounding like I'm completely overstating the obvious, they have kind of a planty taste to them.
Yeah, no, it, but, yeah, but that's you're absolutely right. It has a little bit of an earthy taste without tasting like dirt.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
what the soda tastes like.
To be
like.
Fair, I guess I should say I bought five of the most disgusting, and the one that Chad said, hey, that sounds pretty good, which was ginseng.
Yeah, yeah. Ginseng, actually, I would probably drink that. The other ones is yeah. like, no, I'm not going to touch this. It's like the wasabi Kit Kats. I'm not.
Those were good.
I'm sure
they were good. And I'm not even saying that's ironic good or, oh, I'm trying to be weird good. I don't like wasabi. I don't like it. But the wasabi Kit Kats were this weird combination of a sort of
wasabi
heat.
As we know it is horseradish.
Yeah.
It's green horseradish.
And I don't like horseradish. It was sort of this heat and this sort of sweet with this chocolate that kind of combined the food. I mean, I'm not saying that it was the best thing I've ever had in my life, but it was surprisingly good.
And much better than this ramen was.
Much better than ramen was. I would actually have the wasabi Kit Kats again.
You know,
ramen,
I wanted to see how bad these flavors were. But
pretty bad.
I couldn't do a whole bottle myself because, you know, looking at the nutritional value on them, they were horrible.
What flavors did you get?
Okay, so the John was really excited about tekiyaki, which is like...
octopus ball.
Yes, octopus ball. Kimchi, gross. Curry, ginseng, red chili oil.
Chili oil. Not red chili, like not a hot spicy thing, but it was specifically red chili oil.
Yeah.
With garlic.
Wow.
These things,
very happy looking.
A lot of these things stunk too.
Yeah.
And then the last one was the one Dan already mentioned, the teriyaki one.
Yeah.
The worst for me was kimchi. That
it was pretty gross. It smelled and tasted exactly like kimchi.
I had a gag reaction to kimchi.
I don't like kimchi.
Some of them smelled really bad. I actually like the curry one. I drank the rest of the bottle of it. Yeah, it was a shared mutual tongue punishment for everyone around the around the table.
I am like chatting that phrase right now.
Shared mutual tongue punishment.
Yeah.
So
I think I've seen movies that end that, actually.
And it was all about
a good way to phrase it.
It was all about I wanted to see the reactions everyone else had to these horrible things. And I'm brave enough that if I'm going to ask other people to go through this, I'm going to put myself through it too.
Yeah, I was actually
I'm
surprised.
I'm not going to be that big of a dick.
I was actually surprised by the taste. Some of the ones that I thought that would just be abhorrent were actually not that bad.
Curry wasn't bad.
The curry actually didn't taste like curry at first. It was the aftertaste.
Yeah.
Literally, I mean, and it was a strong curry aftertaste.
The chili,
the drinking of it, no.
The kimchi, I gagged.
The kimchi smelled horrible, but tasted sweet, and it was more of an aftertaste.
The chili
there
one
was a kimchi.
The chili one tasted like jalapeno soda.
Yes,
not that I've ever had that.
Yeah,
before.
It was like it was a hot soda.
Yeah. Jalapeno taste.
I didn't like the ginseng because of the it tasted like dirt.
Yeah,
it really did.
I didn't like the ginseng
and. The teriyaki wasn't good either.
The teriyaki was good. I was expecting
it was salty
it to be,
or something.
I was teriyaki.
I'm not sure even how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
The thing that was supposed to be like the octopus or squid, that was disgusting. And the smell of it covered the whole room.
Mm. There was one I remember that I forget which one it was. I don't think anyone drank it. I took a little sip of it and then just poured the rest of it out. Most of them, I drank my little ounce sample of it. I drank the whole thing, but there was the one and it was just horrible.
I dipped my finger in the kimchi one and just licked a drop off my finger because I know going into it, I do not like kimchi.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't like kimchi either, but it wasn't that bad.
I only regret that Dan couldn't experience that with us and that more people couldn't experience it with us.
Oh, I don't regret one bit. Thanks for thinking of me, but no, I'm perfectly fine with
Dan. I'll bring you a bottle of it for recording one day. I already have Christmas gifts for you. I'll just slip one of those in with the Christmas gift.
I already have horrible, stinky, foreign Christmas
gifts.
Can
you always get me like the ginseng one? All right, so I'm going to tell you one Christmas story here. We'll keep going like this. This is going to be a bonus episode. But let me tell you one thing here, and then we'll try to go to a gaming topic. So my family trades names for Christmas. So what we do is every year, we put everybody's name into a hat. You draw one person's name, and that's the person you're buying for. So that way, that one person can get more gifts or better gifts. And actually, even in the process of buying that person one gifts or better gifts, you're spending less because, while I don't have a lot of extended family, I have no aunts, uncles, cousins. I've mentioned this before, I know, on the show.
See, I think it'd be more interesting if you actually did trade names.
Because,
and, like, you became Tex for the next year instead of Dan.
But because
he'd have to skin a bear and glue the fur onto his chest.
I know. It'd be like a Jacob and Esau transformation to get there. But because of the fact that we swapped these names and there's enough people in my immediate family, if you were to buy one decent gift for each of these people, like a DVD, you would spend a lot more than buying really nice gifts for one person. Okay, so with that setup in mind, I drew my brother-in-law's name last year. I drew Adam's name. It was not on his list, but Adam, for some time, been saying he wanted a canoe. Now, to me, this
just
is
randomly.
Like, yeah, to me, this is like, okay, this is like
me coming up to you.
This is what I want my stupid purchases, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to buy this and never use it.
You're going to hide it.
So
you're
going to
hide a canoe.
I ask my sister, obviously his wife,
if this was okay.
Which is
a good play on your part.
I haven't gotten to that part yet. So I ask her, I said, okay, tell me something straight up. Because obviously a canoe is not a cheap purchase. So I said, here's the thing, though. I'll hook the dude up because he's an unbelievably nice guy,
sure.
Okay?
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's a really great guy. And so I'm more than happy to do this for him. But I said, I want to know one thing. Is he actually serious about this? Is he going to use this? Because he keeps talking about it, but I don't want to go out and buy something like that.
If he's just bullshitting
you. Or it's a phase.
Yeah.
3 months from now, he's never going to think of a canoe again. And my sister's like, no. And mind you, she's really super cynical. I mean, she's more cynical than I am, probably. Yeah. And she's like, no, he pretty really will
shooter.
Use this.
Yeah.
He is a huge outdoorsman. He's big into hiking and camping. She's like, he has been talking about this damn canoe for like 2 years to the point that every time they pass a car with a canoe that's got a canoe on it, like on a carrier, their eldest son, who at the time could barely talk, would point out that they had a canoe. And so I'm like, okay, I'll get to this canoe, but he's going to have to pay for it in suffering.
Oh, okay.
So what I did was I said, you know what? Adam is one of the nicest guys, maybe the nicest guy I've ever met. So what I'm going to do is I believe that if I gave him any gift on the face of the earth, and it was plausible enough to look like I was an incompetent gift buyer, it doesn't look like a gag gift. Okay, It cannot look obviously like a gag gift. I just look like I am buying him crap with complete incompetence and disregard. Then he will thank me and smile and be extremely grateful. And I wanted to see, could I break him? So I got him three things. One, I got him a certificate that I made myself, but it said it was for your subscription to the Little League magazine. Because he likes baseball. And he wants his kid to get into baseball. Mind you, his kid's outside a little bit of T-ball and stuff. I mean, his kid's not in Little League baseball.
Right,
okay.
Right.
So this is a completely irrelevant gift. I found a leather guard. And the idea is that if you buy a couple of these, you can put them like on your thumb tip and fingertips.
Yeah.
So you can grasp like if you're trying to work on like, let's say, a car or something, you want to grab like a nut and bolt or something. You can get some torque on them without hurting your fingers.
Why not just put on a glove?
Okay. Well,
it's a stupid gift.
The point of it is it allows more maneuverability of the rest of the hand. You don't have the rest of the hand restricted by a glove. And as a set, people were saying that these are great. I got him one. Now, for anyone who has not figured out how disposable thumb works, you cannot grasp anything with one. Okay. Mm-hmm. You have to have at least two. I got him one. The third thing I did was, I know he's into fishing. So I went out and I bought him not one, not two, but something in the neighborhood of a gross of rubber crawdads that are meant for bait, for catching really big stuff.
Yeah.
Now, what I didn't know when I ordered these things smell like shit. Uh-huh. I mean, they were just awful. When they came into the house, they were stinking up the house. I put them in that closet over there for a while. They stunk up that closet. Even after they were boxed, gift wrapped, and sealed, they were stinking up the rest of my presents.
Like, they were plastic, though. They weren't real crawdads.
They're not real crawdads.
They're just gassing.
They're scented.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because the fish actually have a pretty good olfactory sense.
Yes. Okay.
And so they're scented. And, man, they were just nasty. And what's funny is, of the gifts that I got him, I'm pretty sure he threw out the first two. But because he likes fishing, he has kept the second two.
Of course.
Or the last one, right? I'm sorry, just the last one. And my sister is like, I can't even go in my garage anymore. We have moved them out to the garage and put them in some back corner above the rafters, or I don't even know where. And she's like, they still stink up the house. He's like, they don't smell like anything. I'm like, Adam, I have post-nasal drip. I have almost no sense of smell. I can tell you these things are awful.
So did you get him a canoe?
Yes. I then actually did go out. So then, all right. Let me give the story's ending.
I like that he was going to end the story there. But that was the
stinky
end of the
story. Stinky crawdads.
Yes.
Score.
So the end of the story then is I said to Adam, after I gave him these just awful gifts, and through all of them, he smiled and thanked me exactly as I thought he would.
Because he's a super nice guy.
Despite the fact that I am offloading the worst garbage I could come up with. Yeah. I mean, it was everything shy of a rotten banana peel. You know, he was still smiling, thanking me. So finally, okay, I'd reached the end of these gifts.
Yeah.
And I did not break him. No, I did not break him. And through the whole thing, yeah, I kept deadpan face. Some of my family members were in on the joke. They all kept deadpan faces. Yeah. Everyone did a great job. And I finally said to Adam, I said, Adam, could you help me out? Because I've got a gift for Carla in the basement. I need your help bringing it up. Mm-hmm. And so I took him downstairs and I said, yeah, I've got it right beneath that canoe shaped thing right there. At which point he, you know.
Did he scream like a little girl?
No, I wouldn't remember it that way. He did not.
Oh, okay.
He was extremely pleased. He did actually finish setting up some of the seats and try sitting in it and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, figured out where he was going to put his paddles and where he was going to put his fishing pole and all that kind of stuff. So,
that's so
he did
cute.
Kind of test drive it in the basement.
And he had plenty of bait to put in there.
Yeah.
But
how big of a canoe did you get him?
I would have to look it up to tell you. What I can tell you is this, because when I talked to my sister after I got past, okay, he really will use this canoe. And he did. Mm-hmm. He actually, that month, in December, he took it out onto some river or lake to try it out and went canoeing. And he has used it a ton of times since I got for him. But one of the things that she said that they were kind of looking for was, she's like, we want something that's long enough to actually hold a couple of people and be stable and have a relatively decent cargo capacity. But, you know, we're not Lewis and Clark. We don't want something that's going to require a trailer. We don't want something that's going to take four people to load. So can you get something that's made out of, like, oh, it's not a composite material. What am I trying to think of here? But it's made out of, like,
nylon, graphite.
Yeah, it's not graphite. It's a plastic.
It's not metal, but it's tougher than plastic. Yeah, it's like fiberglass, something like that. It's tougher than plastic.
Fiberglass?
It's not like the first time you scrape a rock, you're going to tear this thing open. In fact, they've actually, like, tested these things.
Actually, those are actually very good, because they actually will go over the bottom rocks quite nicely, because they're flexible.
But it's also light. Even though it's like 9 or 11 or something like that feet long, it only weighs like 70 pounds.
If you really loved him, you would have carved it out of a log by hand.
No, I've got a different friend for that. There's a friend of mine who's, never mind, this is going to go in a really bad place. So, moving along, okay. Damn, this might as well be a bonus episode. But let's just truck into a gaming topic here. If you don't have fun listening to the show for the sake of the stupid things we say, then I don't know.
Then you haven't been listening to the show.
Yeah, then this is apparently
your
first time
to Fear the Boot. This is us.
All right, so.
This is the thing.
All right, Wayner, you gave me three topics. Mm-hmm. I've got one I want to start on, but which one do you want to start on? Killing a game, tables that are out of control, or recognition of stolen idea? I want to talk about tables out of control, but what do you want?
The one I was going to suggest we start with.
All right, go ahead. Set that up. I'll look up Making Molly Canoe while you're doing that.
All right, so I've seen this happen multiple times through the times I've been gaming, where everyone shows up ready to game, but then the side conversations start, and it takes a long time before the game starts. But then you finally get started gaming, and the table is just completely out of control. You've got side conversations will just spark up. You'll be in the middle of something in character, and then suddenly a reference will be thrown out, and everyone's talking about another topic. Or
they throw out a reference, and then everyone has to pull up a funny YouTube video that goes along with it, or a song that drives their point home, or whatever.
And I like suggestions on how to get a table back under control, both as a, what can I do as a GM and what can I do as a player?
First, get rid of the laptops or turn off the internet. Boom.
Actually, I say the phones are the bigger offender. I'm not saying laptops aren't an offender, but at least in my experience, the phones are even worse.
No, I think laptops are worse. Because on phones, you can't bring up the funny YouTube video. Or if you can, it's really ineffective. Laptops, it's just like...
Oh, dude, during that whole Dresden game, every time somebody had a funny song or something, it was coming up on phones.
Yeah, no, that was part of the game, that we bring up songs and music. It was a musical game. Like all
Wayne,
the characters.
Were you running a musical game?
Not intentionally. That's
Wayne, it was your game. Did you feel like that was the phones represented control or a lack of control?
The phones.
Well, wait a minute. Are we talking about? Are we talking about phones now? Or are we talking about the music? Because we brought up music. We played music all the time. Because a lot of the characters were musical characters, right. And a lot of the characters had music that represented their characters.
Now, I will get...
We played that.
I'll meet you halfway on that. For example, when your guy was in the Fae and was playing a sitar, yeah. And you brought up sitar music, because you were even making, like, sitar motion with your hand, but... And so that completely fit within the in-characters moment. When you guys were bringing up Under the Bridge as performed by its original band...
Well, because you can't bring up Under the Bridge performed by really anyone else, otherwise it sounds terrible, mostly, if you bring it off YouTube. But our characters were in a lot of bars and playing music. Our characters were playing the music that we were playing on our phones.
Everything out of control in that game was in character, which makes it a little bit different. But, like, there were a lot of... We talked about the side conversations going on. We'd have two separate scenes going at the same time. As a GM, it was hard for me to get all that back together.
The party was split, but at least the party that was split off was role-playing in character.
Now, in our most recent campaign, however, when the conversation started, it wasn't in character. As a player, I had no idea what I could
do to help
you.
Nobody had any buy-in in the campaign. Yeah.
As a player, I had no idea what I could do to help you as the GM
get control of it. It wasn't a very good game. I mean, it's just that simple. Everyone was really checked out.
Let me ask you a question, though. Nobody had any buy-in. Once again, I wasn't present for this game. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Was it a bad game and therefore people checked out? Or is it a bad game because people were checked out?
No, it's a bad...
I've seen it go both ways.
No, it was a bad game to start with. It wasn't a very good game. People just didn't have very much buy-in and people were getting bored. And I was getting bored running it and it just wasn't very good. The system sucked. A lot of the world that we made was good and the characters were good and there was some good role-playing. You can't knock it out of the park every time. You cannot have every single game session be an A-plus game session. You cannot have every single character you make be the best character you've ever made.
Right.
You cannot have, by extension, if we keep following this logic out, you cannot have every single game you run be an A-plus knock it out of the park game. Just as you have down-tempo game sessions, you're going to have games that just aren't that good that don't work out. And it's not any, at least in this case, it wasn't any one thing. It wasn't like so-and-so was being disruptive, and so they disrupted the whole game. The gaming system, the rules that we were using were terrible, which they were, ruined the whole system. It was a bad rule system, but it didn't ruin the game. The plot that we had was terrible, and that ruined the whole game. It wasn't any of that. Instead of being a B-plus A game, it was more like a C-minus game.
Right. And I think it would have been recoverable, though, but it would take hours to get started.
Because nobody wanted to play it.
But we go back to the first game I played in, the Skies of Glass game that Dan was running. That was an incredible game we all loved, and still a lot of times it would be a long time before we would get started.
Yeah. Gaming is inherently social.
Right. And that's the question I had, is really which the case was. And certainly everybody has their lemons. You know, anyone who has GM'd any number of games has had one crappy game in there, at least one. If you've been GMing for a long time and you're honest with yourself, you probably had a lot of crappy games in there.
Oh, I definitely
did. I have also seen, though, in some cases, games that were either A, salvageable, or B, maybe even could have been good from the start, but silliness at the table kept it from ever even getting a chance.
Yeah, it's like I as a player.
And so I was just curious which was the case.
No, it was this. We could have had a spot on laser focused group, and it just wasn't.
Now,
that great.
Right on that subject, the canoe that I got, Adam.
on that exact subject,
it's an old town. Saranac, 146 XT. It was 14 feet 6 inches long and weighs 80 pounds and is capable of transporting up to 750 pounds of people or cargo.
Wow.
So that's the canoe I got him. So I was wrong on saying 9 to 11 feet.
So if you have a disruptive player, you get one of those canoes and you put the player in that canoe. And then you're set.
You sit in the canoe and pretend you're fishing, and we're going to make you smell the stupid crawdad.
You're the crawdad. No, I'm sorry I brought up the YouTube video, but it was Captain America.
And then after
America.
You hold it, it is like getting WD-40 on your hands or gasoline on your hands. You can wash them for 6 weeks. You can wash them down to skeletal remains, and they still smell like them.
I've always been frustrated with, though, because when I'm a player, I want to help the GM get the game going. Right. I want to help the GM, but I never know how to do that. I always feel like I don't have the same power as a GM to get everyone under control. And if everyone is having fun with their conversations that are not gaming related at all, I don't want to be the basically the mood killer.
I have two things to say on that. One is you absolutely do have the, well, I won't get into power and authority, but you do absolutely have a right to say in the middle of the disruption, say, hey guys, can we calm down here a bit? I'd like to game.
In fact, I will say not only do you have the ability to do so, I think in a sense you have a dual responsibility. Mm-hmm. I think you have a responsibility to yourself because look, that's your time.
Yeah.
Your time is worth something. It is a finite resource you are expending. And if that is not what you want out of that time, then you have a responsibility to yourself to look at these other people and say, guys, if you want to socialize, that's cool. That's not what I'm here for. Can we please game? The second
I hate all of you people, stop talking and only talking characters.
Well, and that's what I was always afraid of, how it would come out.
It would never come out.
During this last campaign, I kept having the thought of, I am not getting what I want out of gaming from this game.
The second thing I would say, the other responsibility I would say, is I think, in a way, the players ought to be aiding the GM. Because I have both played and run games where the table's out of control, and the GM was trying, and nobody was backing them up. Nobody was like, guys, hey, shut up. Chad's trying to run a game here. Let's get in character, or let's at least call it off and go get beers and bowl. Let's get it together here. And I've had people afterwards say, oh, yeah, I felt really bad for you and blah, blah, blah. You know,
but didn't do anything.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you didn't feel bad enough to do anything. Thanks. You know,
I'm going to argue the other side, not because I necessarily agree with the other side, but I do think that there are times when a table has to be rambunctious. Not, I think it, when it gets disruptive to the game, that's bad. But I think that there's times when the GM or the players should kind of let the disruptions run free a bit and then rein it back in. I think that it needs to be acknowledged that this is a social thing that we're doing and that it's amongst friends. And if you haven't gamed in a while, and it's been several weeks or several months, and you haven't seen each other in a long time, and then you're coming back, there has to be allowances made that people want to talk and they want to catch up. They need to get that out of their system so that they can calm down and then play the game.
Do you think scheduling helps? Because I've, once again, both run forums, played in groups, where there's kind of a schedule. In fact, we're doing this right now with the Star Trek game, where we set aside, okay, let's say everyone arrives at 5 o'clock and we game at very different times and days. We don't have a fixed weekly schedule like the Sunday group does, but we might say, well, we're going to get together at 5, and from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, we're going to eat snacks and socialize. At 6 o'clock, we put down and play. And have you guys considered or attempted something along those lines? Say, look, we know everyone wants to socialize. We're all friends. We're going to want to talk, but we have to put ourselves on some kind of a deadline that come X o'clock, that's it.
That's,
you know, by mutual pact, we are all going to shut up and play the game.
That's what I do when I run a game. Not just this last one, which got out of control for a lot of different reasons. Whenever I run any game, that's what I do. I don't know if you guys noticed this, that when we all sit down to game and I'm running the game,
you're watching your clock.
That's right. I'm always pulling out my phone and looking at the time or turning around, because there's a clock behind us when we game. I'm always turning around looking at the clock, and I'm giving you guys a certain amount of time. And when it hits this time, I start.
I have noticed that. And first of all, I think you often give us too much time.
I do.
And well, I come at this from a different take on this.
I gave the group too much time in this last campaign because I didn't want to run the game.
Fair enough. You know? I know. Yeah. And you said as much a few weeks ago.
I don't want to say
opened the door for the out.
I don't want to say I didn't want to run the game. Let me rephrase. I wasn't feeling the game.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The examples of this that I have seen, fortunately, have not been like what Dan had said, where the players are not helping out the GM to stop be disruptive, or they're counteracting the GM's attempts to get the game going. In fact, for me, it's been quite the opposite. I have seen a lot of games where basically we'll all sit around and we'll be talking. And this is, again, at the beginning of a session. We'll sit around talking and gabbing and whatever. Yeah. And from the player's standpoint, I know, because I feel this, is that we're literally waiting for the GM to do something.
Yes.
Yeah. We're waiting for the GM to start going. And
why are you waiting on the GM?
Wait, to...
Because the GM is the storyteller.
Kick it off?
Yes. So it's
not the GM's game. It is everybody's game. I don't understand why... Because here's the problem I have with that. It's not per se that as a GM, I am incapable of saying, okay, guys, I got my notes in order. I've asked Chad about the beer he's drinking. I'm up to date on everybody's social lives. I'm ready to go. Obviously, I can do as much as anybody else. The problem that I've had is the GM sitting there, this is me in many cases, notes in hand, dice ready, character sheets, mech sheets, whatever spread out, and is sitting there looking at everybody. And everyone, you go, kind of looks at GM and kind of even points and laughs from time to time and then goes right back to their side.
See, and that's so the guy. I have not had that.
Yes, you have. You've been part of it.
Yeah.
I love you, Pat, so much. I'm putting my hand on your shoulder.
This guy's a glass game had that a lot where Dan had his notes ready.
And I would do the same thing in Battletech, where there were many times I was sitting there with the notepad out. You know, I had my computer up because I needed the laptop for your guys' financial spreadsheet for the Mercenary Corps. And I'm like sitting there just like waiting, and you guys just kept going and going. And I even say, like, okay, let's go. And nobody, I mean, I don't see why this is the GM's sole responsibility. Because look, I can say, let's start the game. It is not my job to be a second grade teacher and make you guys pay attention to me.
I think it's a social dynamic in the fact that groups look for a leader. And it's either going to be a player that is a leader that will take the initiative and start that game, or minus that, it defaults to the GM.
Well, my thought,
because people
always
think of, if you've got basically a group of Indians and no chiefs,
I apologize
as players,
to all Native Americans.
I don't, because they were Indians and chiefs. So it's, you know, this PC bullshit is out of whack.
We don't live in India.
My thoughts on it have always been
Native Americans known as Indians. Wow. By God.
Okay.
Whatever. But anyway, barring. So all Indians, no chiefs.
Pat it for the boot.com.
Yeah, go for it.
You never check it.
Perfect. Anyway, then it does. I mean, so the players are going to sort of look to the GM as a leader. And I do think that the GMs are part leader in that sense. You say it is all our game. The GM is still the one that's running the game. It's their story. They're the storyteller that is helping us participate.
Even as a GM, when I start barking out and nobody backs me,
and that is a legitimately
that's a
bad thing. Yeah, that is. And I agree. When that happens, that is very bad.
I look to the GM to tell me when they're ready, because I initially, at least when I first started gaming, I always thought, okay, we're not gaming yet because the GM's still getting their notes ready. They're still getting everything straight in their heads. It's like a movie. I was waiting for the lights to go off to indicate that we're ready to start. And I was waiting for GM to say something.
I apparently need to have the clown is down
moment. Here's what I do. My take on it, is it a leader and follower thing? Is the GM in charge? The GM, wave a flag around, put the clown down, whatever. No, my thing is, social activities are broken down in phases and have a sort of social dance to them. Things just don't happen. Things happen for reasons. Yeah. So if everyone's sitting around and you want something to happen and the players want something to happen, and even if you both want the game to happen, if neither one does anything, nothing
Someone
is going
has
to happen.
To give the
so
signal.
There has to be a social dance. There has to be social cues that happen. So what I do, instead of just, putting the clown down or telling everybody to shut the up or whatever, what I always do is
I have no idea what this clown down thing is.
Wayne, I will attempt to find a YouTube video or something I put in the show notes, so anyone who is not familiar with the clown is down knows what we're talking about.
What I do is I try to, when I'm running a game, I want to do something that does that social cue that tells everybody that we're ready, so I make it the same thing every time. I also do it to something that will help me and the other players, and I do it to something that I can maybe reward somebody with and kind of get a happy thing going on.
A 30-second fart.
Other than that, I say, can anyone tell me what happened in the last game?
That
or can anybody, because I never say what happened in the last game, because I don't remember.
It's not a big secret. We know.
Shut up. Like if we're playing Fate, I say I will give a Fate chip to anyone who can give me a recap of what happened in the last game. Or I'll give some experience, or I'll give some coin, whatever the Benny is of the game. And usually what you do is, like any class of people, you have your one or two smarty pants who raise their hands, and they're always the one. But occasionally you will get somebody who
is typically me or Wayne.
You're Wayne. Beth steps up to the plate a bit, and they give a recap. Everybody kind of catches up. Everybody knows it's the social cue. I get to hand out a Benny. I have done something officious. I've handed out a Benny. And where they stop, I maybe do a correction or two if something's like blatantly wrong. And where they stop, I pick up and then we're going in. Or I could even say, like, where they stop is Pat and I's character. We're in the bar arguing. And I go, okay, go with that. And then they can start role playing.
And I was going to say, I think that is an excellent way mm-hmm. to start a session. The example that I was going to mm-hmm. give that is more heavy-handed is...
I have a gun.
No, not that.
Dan's been doing it wrong.
Hot diggity damn.
That's right. Now he knows.
I'm in character.
But
then you'll be good to know it's unloaded.
Yeah. Thank God.
You're gonna blow a hole in your ceiling
one of these days.
But
I always keep it upward. It will be the ceiling.
Not a neighbor, not the school across the street, not one of us.
Eventually, there will come a point where we'll look back on it and laugh.
Well, it's not our roof. We'll laugh at it that day.
Yeah, that's true.
Once my ears stop ringing and...
Yeah, wait, if you've never had a 12-gauge go off without hearing protection this close, you won't be laughing right at the moment.
We have headphones on. It'll help a little.
Yeah, these are not that kind of headphone. Anyway. You see? Pat, you were talking. Why didn't you take control of the table?
I know.
Why didn't I back
I'm not
him?
A GM.
Exactly.
I know, right?
You guys are all a bunch of dicks.
Yeah, I go back to the old stories Chad used to tell about the zone of icy.
Dome of icy.
I have tried to pitch that multiple times to multiple groups.
I
and only Dan.
It was stupid.
It is stupid.
But it works.
It's stupid and it's embarrassing and it's silly that you have to do it, but damn it if it doesn't work.
Yes. Dome of podcasting. Dome of Pat actually wants to talk.
In fact, the guy who first introduced us to the Dome of IC even had a button that said if it's stupid and it works, it's not stupid. And he was absolutely right.
Okay, guys. Dome of Pat talking on the podcast.
So the example that I was going to give, which is similar but not as good.
Pat said last time.
Yeah. Is that the GM would actually have something happen, literally like into action, some kind of an encounter where it's not just, okay, so let's start the game. It's like you do something. So a guy busts in the bar and starts, you know, points a gun at you.
In media res is my favorite way to start.
Something like that,
a game.
Or it's literally there is an encounter right there. And that for me has been helpful in the past. And the fact that all of a sudden now it's game time, it's go time. We've got to get in character and go. And that has broken the ice. Mm-hmm. I like the recap better because that is not as plot wagon just saying, okay, you random encounter to get you guys to start
I'm
playing.
Gonna combine it next time I run something and be a do the recap and then okay, Chad, I want you to roll a save. Oh, you rolled a 20. You needed a 21. Your character sucks. A sniper just shot you through the head.
But it was
now the rest of us can go play.
There you go.
I have to make another character.
I like that. We'll do that. We'll have a sniper take Chad out.
There you go. Okay.
Not my character.
You personally.
Me personally. Yes. They're going to hire an assassin to take me out. He better be good, Wayne. That's all I got to say.
John says, I asked him, so the Dinosaurs board game was your idea? John says, sort of. I expressed my joy at Wayne's discovery, and he went later and got it. I call it Wayne's. And I said, your defense will be noted on the show. John says, defense? The Dinosaurs game is a stroke of pure brilliance.
Yeah, John did have
John
us take a picture
it.
And post
and
it on Facebook.
I said, you were making fun of Wayne for buying it. Certainly not. I was celebrating it. It's obviously the greatest board game ever made. This is not what I recall coming from this man's mouth during our Blood Moon Goblins editing sessions. Wow. I'm just saying. So
that fits with what he told us, though.
Yes, it does.
For around us, he's all happy about the game. Mm-hmm. Around Dan, when Dan's harassing him about it. Oh, no. It's a horrible thing. Horrible. I can't believe he would pay money for that.
I love the body language. I'm sorry, this is a podcast. I can't even describe it. Wayne looked like a puppy that got hit with a rolled up newspaper.
Children in Africa don't have enough food, and he can spend money on a board game.
Wayne, you bastard.
Oh, my.
You are not the mama. Oh, gracious. I feel like we owe the audience either another topic or an apology. One of the two.
Both.
Probably both. I'm sorry for everything. Now,
Dome of podcasting.
Some great stuff, man.
Let me ask you this. What do you want?
Mm-hmm.
You're running a game.
Yeah.
You have us around you, whatever, playing this game. And we all sit down. How do you want it to start? Like, we all sit down and we talk, it's like, I tell you about the beer, you guys catch up, you know that Pat just got this new video game. Okay, you crack open the beer, you sit down. How do you start it?
We've seen what he's done.
Or what do you want it to start?
What I want it to start like
yeah.
is the same way a movie starts. And I don't mean the movie itself. I mean the experience of movie watching. Mm-hmm. When you go to a theater, you pay a certain amount of time, a certain amount of money to see that movie. Now, prior to the movie, people are kind of, you know, talking, socializing, playing with their phones. Mm. Once the trailers start, people generally get quieter, but you still get the occasional joke or people talking. Nobody really cares that much because it's the previews. I mean, I enjoy previews, but I realize most people don't care about them as much as I do. So whatever. But as soon as that first scene hits, it is expected that because of the fact that everyone here sacrificed something to see this movie, shut up. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, if I am game mastering, I totally accept that there's going to be some amount of socialization around the table. But if by the time we've had 30 minutes, an hour of socialization, and clearly the clown is down, the character sheets are out, the dice are out, I'm looking expectantly at everyone, I've maybe even said, okay, you guys ready to start? Yeah. Who wants to give me a recap?
You've made your known social cue that we are starting.
So I'm not just sitting there hoping somebody notices me, like the shy kid at a dance. And people keep going. At that point, what it looks like to me is either A, there's no respect, or B, it is a sign to me they're not that interested in the game. And I'll tell you right now, that kills games for me. If I'm running a game and you guys, in truth, love the game, but all I am getting is these signals of you'd rather BS around and play funny things on your phones and talk about beer and whatever, the message that sends to me is, well, I guess my game's not actually as good as I thought it was. I'll tell you right now, that's going to take my performance down at least one notch. And there's been multiple games where actors have been like, you know, I'm sorry, this game's not what it should be. Maybe we should run something else. So it's like, why do you want to kill it? It's a wonderful game. And the thought kind of back of my head is, if it's a wonderful game, then why didn't you guys want to play it? And so that's, I guess, kind of is, I need somebody to tell me I'm pretty.
I think that people need to realize, too.
You're pretty, Dan.
Again, speaking
to... You need someone better to tell you you're pretty.
You got a pretty mouth.
I know Pat likes you, Wayne, because you were the only redhead on the show.
Mm-hmm. Speaking from the other side of it, from the other side of the argument, I think that we also need to realize that people have to be people. You cannot be on at 100% attention and 100% in character and 100% focused for 6, 8 hours.
Absolutely.
And the problem is if you have a large group, their attention does not wane at the same time.
Look, in my Star Trek game, the Transporter Chief is played by a raggedy Andy doll.
That's a little creepy, by the way.
Look, here's the point. My point is,
he is the best player in that campaign.
Actually,
kind of, yes.
What's kind of funny? That damn raggedy Andy doll is the only thing that can roll dice. Yeah. When everybody else is failing... I have to give a little backstory here to explain this. When we were growing up, and by we, I mean my siblings and I, all four of us had our own distinct security toys, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, with my youngest sister...
Dan had a shotgun.
That came
along. It was a plush shotgun.
Yes.
So cute.
But my youngest sister's security toy of choice was, she had been given somewhere along the way as a very, very young child, a Raggedy Ann doll. And we used to all go to a particular babysitter whose name I think was Nancy. She unfortunately died decades ago from cancer, but I think her name was Nancy. And this woman did not know the name of Raggedy Ann. She was not aware of what a Raggedy Ann was. So she used to always say to my sister, here's your baby. Don't forget your baby. You need your baby doll. Whatever. She always kept referring to his baby. And so as a result, my sister to this day refers to her expanding collection, which is now like 150 of them. She collects Raggedy Ann and Andy's. And she has, like, I'm serious, it's like people that collect Barbie. She has some rare and valuable ones. And she collects these things. But she still to this day, even though she knows the Raggedy Ann and Andy, simply refers to them collectively as babies because this is just built into her brain for 30 some odd years.
Does she put them in the corner?
So the tradition, or
nobody puts baby in the corner.
Okay.
So John was telling a story about after Patrick Swayze died, he was at a trivia night, and apparently the guy that runs it's a big Patrick Swayze fan, and that night they named their team Nobody Puts Baby at the Corner. So the Transporter Chief, she put out one of her Raggedy Andys and even put like a little nameplate in front of them because everyone has their nameplates because nobody can remember anybody else's character names because it's a fairly sizable group. And it is Lieutenant Miles B. Baby. And there was a particular game where everyone kept putting their empty beer bottles, for lack of anywhere else to put them, in front of Miles B. Baby. And so the first time that Miles B. Baby botched a roll, and this was an unusual event, this damn freaking stuffed animal can roll better than any human being at the table, we just presuppose that Miles was drunk. But where was I going with that? I don't even recall. Oh, but my point was, to your thing about people cannot be IC all the time.
Right.
You know, look, whenever somebody has to make a roll to do a site-to-site transport or to do some tricky thing that involves the transporter, and all of a sudden there's a Raggedy Andy rolling the dice, obviously we are not in perfect character in IC.
No.
Okay? There is no freaking Raggedy Andy on this ship.
Right.
And everyone's laughing, and it's funny, and whatever. But it occurs, we make a few jokes, we put some empty liquor bottles by it, and then we get back to the game.
Yeah.
People are self-regulating. Mm-hmm. And I think what I've seen in a lot of gaming groups, though not that one, that one seems to be pretty good about self-regulating, is once the players are off topic, if the GM doesn't start screaming and yelling and you know, escalating things to a place they don't need to go, the players are not going to self-regulate and say, guys, okay, it was funny, but let's get back into the game. Or at least they don't do it frequently enough. I guess I can't say it's never happened.
But I've seen a very different style on how the two of you seem to do it in game. I don't know if it's intentional or not. But Dan will have his notes, and he'll sit there in silence until it gets really awkward, and then everyone's back ready to play. Chad will, by sheer force of personality, bring the table back. I think if I had it happen as often as I've seen it, I'd go out and buy an air horn. Forget passive-aggressive, forget personality. I'm blowing an air horn at the table.
Fair enough. Pat, what would you do? I know you don't really run games.
Well, I don't run games, but on the flip side, I know that I always try to not be disruptive in the game. When you know, role-playing is going on, say, between the GM and one other character, a couple others, and I'm not involved, one of the things that I always try my best to do is to not start up side conversations with the other players that are not about the game, and just sit there as respectfully as I can and let them have their RP, even though I'm not involved with it. Now, I'm sure that I don't always succeed in that, but I make a conscious effort to try. And I think that's something the players should do. Cut down on the side conversations. I mean, you know, you started the game and it can be very disruptive as players. So just be mindful of that. Try not to do it. That's what I would do, again, from a player's perspective.
Yeah, I like the idea of something that is the Dome of IC, something that you've created a Pavlovian response that when this happens, everyone knows, okay,
the clown
we're focused.
Is found. Yeah, and and I think that's kind of the way that I would describe in retrospect the topic that we just covered here is obviously what should occur is common courtesy and mind reading and all these things that look don't happen in human relationships as often as they should. And so when you have a table that's out of control,
say something. It doesn't matter if you're the game master or not.
Yes,
say something.
And that's true.
But
yeah, the best thing is to communicate
everything in balance, because you don't want to be that guy where it's just like you've had great role play, great role play, great role play, and somebody's like, hey, are we getting together afterwards? Shut up, I'm role playing! You know, you don't drop the hammer. Yeah. We're all friends here. Say,
did you see that movie trailer? That counted as IC, and the general's offended by movie trailer.
Oh my God, this is the 13th century, what the f's a movie?
But at the same time, if that conversation goes on for 5 minutes, then I think the GM should
put
the kibosh on it.
That's the scary thing.
I do love Dan's passive aggressive. When we start talking too much at the table when the game's going, suddenly it starts becoming in character.
Yeah.
He's done that to us a couple times. And it's like, you know what? I respect that.
I don't remember if it was you or if it was me or probably both. There was somebody that we gamed with who was never in character. They're always out of character. And so it was Phil. And I would always look at him like I would let him go for a little while. And then I would be like, Phil, anything you say after this point is in character. And he'd be like, oh, I'm getting in my car and I'm going to go do this and I'm going to do this. It's like, Phil, we're playing Knights and Dragons, 13th century. You're talking about cards. It's going to go IC. It's like, I'm going to go. And suddenly, and it was great. It worked.
because Phil started playing insane people who talked about metal beasts and riding around in them and things like that. And,
oh my.
And it just, and it incorporated in.
He's
so
like
well.
The Connecticut Yankee, King Arthur's Court, except he's not a Connecticut Yankee.
Yes.
He's just crazy.
Yes. That's actually where the kind of the flying train thing came from. It was a little bit of him just musing about this idea, this insane idea. And then it's just like, okay, can we get back to the game? Can we get back to the game? And then it's just like, okay, fine. Phil, we're just gaming around you. It's just like, and the coefficient of airflow on the back of the train. And just like,
wow.
Everybody got into it. It's like, that is a crazy person. I think that it is important to be focused, but to also let the social aspect happen because people got to get it out of their system. It's everybody's responsibility. And Dan, I have a suggestion for you to improve your game mastering. Don't sit there to start the game. Say something. Even if it's, guys, I want to start the game now.
I probably should, and I'll tell you pretty bluntly why I haven't lately. It's mostly because the past year has actually, I would say overall, been a pretty good year for me. It's been a year of growth and blah, blah. I'm not going to give a huge retrospective here.
Hippy-dippy.
Right, but the point being, despite the fact that it's been a good year, it has been an exhausting year.
Sure.
And so typically when I come to a game, the last thing I want to have to do is to exert control, to expend political capital in order to have fun. You are correct. Your suggestion is 100% right. All I'm giving is the reason why I don't is because just like I don't have it in me.
You know how you pointed out that I'm the world's laziest GM, where I get other people to create the world and I get other people to write the plots and I get other people to roleplay and I get other people to drive me to the freaking game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What do you think how I start the game? Can someone else give me a recap? It works.
Yeah, and you know what? I tell you, this is where I guess, well, in some regards, the Star Trek group is a
very... You don't need to take notes. We are your notes.
Yes.
You bastard.
We'll see. This is something where, with my Star Trek group, I've got to give them props because of the fact that they're pretty self-regulating. They give me recaps I don't even ask for. At the start of the game, it's typically... My youngest sister, same one that has Miles B. Baby, but not always. But typically, she will say, okay, everyone shut up. I'm going to give a recap from last time. And she takes
out... You've got your leader.
Yeah, and she takes out her notes and starts reading them down.
Yep.
And she's not afraid to get snarky. And you know what? I appreciate that. As a game master, I appreciate the fact... And Scott, he does it as well. Scott Bonner from our forums, he does it as well. And I have to give them credit for the fact that I don't have to always be the one wrangling the table. That they are willing to say, look, this is our game. And so we are going to take some responsibility for it as well. It's not just us running around like cats on cocaine, and it's Dan's job to control us. And if he can't, he's a failure as a GM. You know, that's not the mentality they have.
You know what's hilarious?
Cats on cocaine.
That, and when you have a table full of people, you're the game master, and you're role-playing with one of them. And the rest of the table is being disruptive and side conversations. They're talking about beer and playing with phones and YouTube videos and all this sort of And you're role-playing with one person, and then you notice this out of the side of your eye. You're aware of it, and you drop a bomb. I mean, this, you drop a major plot bomb, huge reveal, something horrible happened. I mean, and just with the role-playing of that one person you're with, and to them, it's just like, oh my God, that's so awesome. And then someone hears it. They hear the bomb you just set down in front of this guy, and they're just like, shut up, guys, shut up. Something cool. What did you just say? And you look at them, and you go, oh no. You're not there. And then you turn around and you keep
have
role
much
playing.
More blunt response of
that.
I'm not repeating it.
Yeah. That all oh, that
That's
works
a much
too.
More blunt response.
That works too.
I just
that
explained it. I'm
let
not
me tell
repeating
you,
it.
That shuts them up.
Yeah.
That shuts them up right quick.
All righty. Well, this one was kind of all over the board, but you know what? It's kind of strange. Do you realize there's an irony here? And that the conduct of this show of being on off topic. We started off with a long social topic, got down to RPGs, and then wove in and out. We, in this show, performed a microcosmic example of the very topic we were discussing.
It's a very meta show.
That's because we are Fear the Boot.
And we are meta.
That was totally planned. Mm-hmm. Do you guys see what we did there? Go back and listen from the start. It'll all make sense.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the first show I've done with a script, and I have to say, I think it turned out really well. It sounded very natural.
It did. All right. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you guys for tuning in. We'll start off next episode with one of your audio calls, recapping what we talked about on the last show. If you remember what audio was, tell your GM that they owe you a fate chip. And
yes,
just tell them Dan said so.
That's right. It said it on Fear the Boot.
If you remember what audio was, they owe you a fate chip. So anyway, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you all next time.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.